Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Sunday Show. It's Sunday at 6 p.m. And this is the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell, F. Wayne Johnson, and myself, Gwendolyn Berry. Today we don't have Jack. Jack's off, but Wayne and I are here. We're going to talk about this week.
We got it covered, girl. We got it back.
Okay. Yeah. And so today, Hillary Clinton rolled out with her campaign. I'd like to play that. Her campaign video, which is really smart. I think that she's showing a great deal of smarts doing it. Hang on, I'll get the video here. I don't want to play it in another site.
I'm getting ready for a lot of things. A lot of things. It's spring, so we're starting to get the gardens ready, and my tomatoes are legendary here in my own neighborhood. My daughter is about to start kindergarten next year, and so we're moving just so she can belong to a better school.
Mi hermana y yo estamos empezando un primer negocio.
After 5 years of raising my children, I am now going back to work.
Every day we're trying to get more ready and more prepared.
Big boy, coming your way.
Right now I'm applying for jobs. It's a look into what the real world would look like after college.
I'm getting married this summer to someone I really care about.
I'm going to be in a play and I'm going to be in a fish costume. I'm going to find fishes.
I'm getting ready to retire soon. Retirement means reinventing yourself in many ways.
Well, we've been doing a lot of home renovations.
But most importantly, we really just want to teach our dog to quit eating the trash.
And so we have high hopes for 2015 that's going to happen.
I started a new career recently. This is a fifth-generation company, which means a lot to me. This country was founded on hard work, and it really feels good to be a part of that.
I'm getting ready to do something, too. I'm running for president. Americans have fought their way back from tough economic times, but the deck is still stacked in favor of those at the top. Everyday Americans need a champion, and I want to be that champion. So you can do more than just get by. You can get ahead and stay ahead, because when families are strong, America is strong. So I'm hitting the road to earn your vote, because it's your time. And I hope you'll join me on this journey.
I wish you could have seen the video, because basically she hit every demographic from gay couple to lesbian couple to people of color, people that are bilingual, people who are only speaking Spanish. I mean, every demographic. Wayne, every demographic is hit in that commercial. And I'm only ever going to say this once. She is a very strong woman, character-wise. She's very strong. It's such a goddamn shame. She is a war hawk, a power broker. One of the 1% who is definitely there to keep the machine greased and running on through to the next one. It's such a shame. I am supporting a woman for president, Dr. Jill Stein. I've invited her through her press coordinator, Dennis Traynor. I got in touch with him and asked him if maybe Dr. Stein can come and spend a Sunday with us talking about her campaign. And
very interesting.
He will set that up. I want to also say exactly what David is saying from the chat room right now. He just said Hillary because you got to believe in the continuity of war. And he's right. That's exactly where she's coming from. What I dislike about this, that will be the obvious attacks against her because she's a woman. I don't like that
right.
at all. But, you know, if you see, when you get a chance, you got to look at that video because a woman has hit every demographic of voter in there. And
well,
she's appealing. She is appealing to basically reading the list of issue points. It seems pretty clear that she's vying for the disenfranchised Republicans who understand the insanity of the party politics for the last 8 years. And she's appealing. She's an appealing candidate who can make changes working with the Congress, is the established and respected world leader already. And at the top of the list of things to do is to reinvigorate income by supporting business. And that's something I posted today. And I said, chastised by it was another quote, but I mean, I said, you know, it's like she is the destroyer of worlds. She'd be the whole of Babylon come to town.
that's pretty rough.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I like the biblical stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at least now you're appealing to the religious light in our country here right now. these are some talking points I'd like to point out is when Bill Clinton was first elected governor in Arkansas, they went into with the idealistic aspects of what you and I would be in favor of and things like that. But he lost the second election because he didn't have the corporations like Tyson on board. And, you know, kind of he was tweaking their nose. Well, they learned that we're going to make any change at all. We've got to be in power. So when he went back and ran then for the third time, or, you know, for the third election, they embraced the Tyson and the Fortune 500 aspects in Arkansas and won. So, in other words, they learned the bitter lesson of idealism doesn't get you, you know, you might be able to get elected, but it doesn't keep you there so that you can make the changes that you could potentially make. Also, too, now here's the other aspect that's really going to be tough for her. The real mountain that she's got to climb is George Bush, after a two-term president, i.e. Reagan, then for another Republican or another of the same party then to be elected for the third term, Bush was the one that, Daddy Bush was the one that broke the mold. So now following behind two terms of Democratic President Obama.
I don't buy it that because you've had 8 years of Democrat, now it's time to turn the corner.
The reign's over, yeah, or whatever, yeah.
And the follow-up is going to be, you know, basically a Republican because of the, you know, the lackluster of Democrat politics because of the incumbent or what have you. I really don't think
that. I hope you're right. I hope you're right in this scenario because, you know, what we're talking about is, you know, what we're looking at, and I'm pretty sure because I think he's pretty well anointed by the mainstream power brokers in the Republican Party, is Jeb Bush. Now you're talking about another Bush, and
Jeb Bush
is going to be disastrous for the working middle class.
But, you know, from my point of view, Wayne, either one of them is bad. I don't want to see either one of them there. And you're pretty much going to get the same shit out of each of them. I really do think, as far as leadership and the helmsmanship of this country, I think you're going to get the same thing. I mean, it's astounding, David just wrote in the chat room that they were having a discussion in the Williams household a few days ago, and they realized that his daughter has not known this country in peace ever in her whole life. And she's 16 years old.
I have a 20-year-old And yes, and I'm just doing a quick scan here in my head. Since she's been born, my 20-year-old, she'll be 21 in August, has not been had a year go by that we have not been at war, and we're losing good men and women in our armed services. Well, like we've said in the previous shows.
Yeah, well.
The 1984 scenario where you have to keep a war going to keep your economies going and you know, your industrial base manufacturing, I think we're kind of there.
Well, I suppose you could put it there, but that's not where we should be. Leadership should be.
Oh, no, no, I agree. We should not be there, but science fiction has a unique way of becoming science fact.
Yeah, these old craggy bastards and bitches who sit in the catbird seat, choosing our leadership for us through funding. This is how they keep their profits up, by despoiling the planet and the environment and communities, and keeping. Oh, David's calling in.
Do
hello,
it. Have David come on.
Hello.
Hello, David. Welcome.
Calling direct from Okistan.
Oh, I love Okistan.
Just north of Texas.
Yes. Well, that's all. Well, I'm sure there's some kind of hickey-fied name for Texas, too.
Yeah, really. We're the belly button of Texas.
There you go. There you go.
Another country heard from. You know, that...
Well, if you would bear with me for a second, give me just a couple minutes here, and let me read something to you. And
All right.
See if you can recognize a pattern here. Vietnam War, of course. Lebanon, Grenada,
right.
Panama, Gulf War,
right.
Iraqi no-fly zone,
right.
The Somalia Civil War,
yep.
The intervention in Haiti, Bosnian
mm-hmm.
War, Kosovo
mm-hmm.
War,
uh-huh.
and the war in Afghanistan, and
the
Iraq War, the war in northwest Pakistan, which we're a part of, the military intervention in Libya,
yep.
and the multinational intervention against ISIL. Pretty much sums up what's been going on for the past, about 60 years in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, we're supposed to be the leader of freedom and democracy and so on and so on. But, you know, there hasn't been a day that we haven't been fighting somebody.
Well, David, I know I've said it on the show here, and Gwen knows very well that my time that I spent down in South America with the Navy, they deployed me down there, and that was to prop up Pinochet in Chile, the military junta in Argentina. When I got home, replaced Nixon. Ford, you know, it was all part of the Ford and all that. But anyway, what I was, and I wrote in one of my blogs, was my father and his brothers were all sent into World War II to dethrone these self-appointed military juntas and dictators. When I served, they sent me down to South America to prop them up. And I know, in retrospect, I did not do those people any favors, the citizens of that country, because especially in Argentina, the period they now call the Lost Children of Argentina, where the military junta, the federales, just totally abused the middle class in that country.
Yeah, it was a lost decade, actually.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. A minimum of a decade plus.
You know, I think that we could probably point to the upturn of people in the streets about the Vietnam War as playing a powerful part in politics of that day.
Mm-hmm. We went down there to make sure that communism did not come into our hemisphere, because basically I was on the West Coast in San Diego when Vietnam finally fell. You've seen all the iconic pictures of the helicopters leaving the U.S. Embassy.
Yeah, from the embassy.
People trying to hang
yeah.
on to the skids, the helicopter skids
mm-hmm.
and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was. I was on the West Coast in San Diego, stationed in San Diego at that time, and then they transferred me to Charleston, South Carolina, where I was on a destroyer.
Well, now we've seen America has seen a little bit of the. The explosion of protests across the globe. I mean, the media has put Occupy in the news, but not like they should have, nor with everything that really happened to it. But there's been a lot of protests and a lot of, I think there has been a shift in this country. I think that a lot of people who are looking, you know, who take the time to critically think about this election coming up,
well, there's the key word, critically thinking. Sorry.
Yeah, I think a lot of more people are becoming aware of the sort of the game that's being played, you know, the two-party, good cop, bad cop type thing, you know. And how they Democrats and Republicans, look for the vote and play off each other. You know, that lesser of two evils type thing, and like I said, the good cop, bad cop, and they rely on that. They rely on the election to be about things that, not about war or not about class or not about anything that really affects it. They pick, and it'll happen this election. They'll pick a divisive issue.
Let's pick that one.
You know, whether it's gay marriage or marijuana or something like that. And that will be the thrust of the election. The Wall Street is going to go untouched. The banks are going to go untouched. All these issues will go untouched, and they'll center on, you know, hope and all this other stuff, slogans and you know, side issues that differentiate the two parties, and that'll be it.
Yeah, Dave, I was just thinking. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Glenn.
It's going to be a divide and conquer scenario. You should see. I guess, David, you might have seen Hillary's video. Did you know?
No, I watched it, yeah.
Yeah, did you know?
Oh, yeah, it was slick. It was nice.
She really
it brings up the warm and fuzzy right into the back of my throat.
Well,
you know,
something I want to interject.
She's going to have a lot of gay support. She's going to have women's support. I mean,
that's
that's
the issue she's counting on. You know, that's the thing.
I know women in my own family.
She won't touch drones. She won't touch Ukraine. She won't touch any of the war that's going on, the military budget being just outrageous. She won't touch the corporate welfare. She won't touch the tax dodgers. She won't touch anything that is controversial that diminishes her chances of getting that $1 billion needed to get elected.
$2.8
billion with a B.
Yeah.
You know, I had to kind of laugh to myself here recently, of course, with John Kerry and the talking with Iran and the potential agreement that we have now with Iran. Of course, you know, the right-wing pundits saying, you know, how Obama is just, you know, he's going to just gave Iran the nuclear bomb and stuff. I keep saying, look, you're establishing the communication lines. Let me give you an example. We talked with the Russians since Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, right on up through there. And then when finally Russia imploded, we knew that, you know, we were trying to make agreements with them. We knew they were kind of cheating on them and stuff, but we still had a line of communication so that when Russia imploded, financially and economically, Reagan had the line of communications with Gorbachev to say, look, let's start destroying this stuff. Let's get our act together here a little bit. And I want to give you another example. When Nixon signed the agreement and opened up China, the right-wing, extreme right-wing in the country said, well, he just slapped the face of every Vietnam soldier and the guy who lost his life by working, you know, making a deal with those communists. Then when Reagan, you know, was signing and working with Gorbachev again, the right-wing extremists said, well, Reagan's just lost the Cold War. He just kowtowed to those damn Russians and stuff. We should have gone in. They were down, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, in other words, in essence, Obama's in good company, I guess. Nixon, who opened up China, Reagan, who was able to peacefully bring Russia out of the behind the Iron Curtain into the world community.
Yeah, I mean, you can hide your dogma and your rhetoric, you know, and that's maybe what gets some of the Republicans elected. But
sure,
the thing is when you're actual leader, you have to lead and realize that you don't have to work with you have to work with people that you may not have the same viewpoint of.
Exactly.
I think if I have to applaud Obama about something, opening up the relations with Cuba
and Cuba
and these Iran talks, you know, it's a positive from him. So
yeah,
I agree with you, Dave. Right.
Yeah.
Now, this is what his legacy will be. That and the affordable health care, which, by the way, I was watching. It was last Sunday. It was a Wall Street report, one of the business reports that come on real early, like at 6:30 in the morning and stuff. They're saying that the Affordable Health Care Act is working. It's saving a lot of money, and the cost. In other words, the cost of medical treatment has slowed down because it was exponentially rising year after year. The costs are now, you know, being brought back in line. You know, hundreds of thousands or millions of people are now being insured who were not insured
before. Yeah, 7 million people that weren't insured before. Now, you know, I had my issues with the Affordable Care Act, and, you know, I thought it should have been single payer, and you know, and I had issues with making the secret deals with the pharmaceuticals before even the thing started. But all that aside, you know, you have to give the Affordable Care Act the credit that it deserves. It has insured people that weren't insured before, and it has given benefits to people that were not able to get the benefits before. And, you know, was it a perfect deal? No, it's not. But it's certainly better than what we had. And it's better than the zero plan that the Republicans had. So,
Exactly.
You know, you gentlemen are correct about the Affordable Care Act. It has put a lot of people on the insurers' rolls. There's people who can afford coverage when they're paying. But my sister got it. And she's paying off school loans and trying to make ends meet and start a whole new career in acupuncture and all that. And she can't afford health care. So she goes and she signed up a year ago for the affordable health care. And it was great. She had, I guess, down here what they call sterling coverage. She was paying $12 a month. She had zero copay for prescriptions. And it worked out really well for her for a year. And then all of a sudden she got a notice from her insurer that her premiums were going up to $77 a month and that she had a much higher deductible. I mean, huge deductible. And, I've heard this has happened to quite a few people. Now it might be a glitch because Debbie talked with her insurer and he said, her agent, he said, I'll get this fixed. Don't worry about it kind of thing. But I haven't signed up yet, guys. And I spent two trips to the hospital last year. And I was thinking about talking to an agent and getting myself, but I'm starting to think maybe I should just hold out for Medicaid for crying out loud. And, you know.
You might have to pay a penalty, Gwen, if you hadn't signed up. Because if you don't have insurance, and you haven't signed up to affordable care, you know, you may be hit at the end of the year with a penalty.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what a lot of people are complaining about now. They're discovering that the self-employed, they didn't get insurance. And, and you might want to check into that.
I have a very good friend back home. Her and her husband, he was several years older than her, had their own machine shop. And, you know, they ran it for many, many years. And then, you know, when he retired, and his wife's basically my age, maybe a year older. But anyway, he's has since passed away. And this is the first time that she has had insurance in a very, very long time with the affordable health care. So, you know, she was uncovered for probably close to maybe 10, 15 years. And but now she does at least have insurance, and like I said, and I'll make no bones about it. I turned 62 last Tuesday, so
hey, congratulations!
Who figured I'd last this long? This old hippie, God, it's not. It's not because I took care of myself.
Well, you know, I was actually on the state program here with the state Medicaid deal, and I'm still trying to figure out what with my last trip what's going on with that, my last trip to the hospital. But yes, David, I'm going to talk to the insurance agent and find out what I have to pay. But you know, also to penalize people who can't afford insurance, I mean, isn't that kind of like going out and grabbing blood out of stones? I mean,
I'm not sure exactly how that works, but I think the whole thing is the only way that the Affordable Care Act can work is if they get almost everybody signed up, you know, whether it's insurance by some other company or through the Affordable Care Act. So I think that's why they may be a little draconian in their attempts there. But I'm sure they'll tweak it as it goes along. And, you know, one thing I might add is, you know, even if the Republican president does make it in office and the Republicans have the majority in Congress, there's just too many people that have signed up to this Affordable Care Act for them to politically, you know, it'd be political suicide to get rid of it at that point.
There'll be many that'll run on the platform of, you elect me and I'm going to repeal Obamacare.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah.
And
of course, it'll be called Obamacare. It won't be called the Affordable Health Care Act.
Yeah, Obamacare,
you know,
whatever it is. But the reality of it is it's too late to do it. I mean, they may do sort of a cosmetic thing that makes them look like they did something, but, you know, you're not going to disenfranchise 10 or 20 million people and, you know, live with the repercussions of that.
Well, David, I'd like to ask you, I mean, you just dealt with a lot of hospital bills and such. Do you use affordable health care, have you got a really good insurance from work and all of that?
Yeah, I got a Blue Cross Blue Shield, and so it sort of had a lull there a little bit where it wasn't that great, but now, these days, it's considered one of the best plans in the state, so it worked out pretty well. So
That's good.
I had, if you know, nobody knows, Gwen knows, but I had the big heart attack, you know, and had a couple of stents put in. And,
my.
It was one of those little maker things. But anyway, I think I was in the hospital for 3 days, something like that, you know. And did the stents and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the medical bills were really close to about $100,000.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So it didn't take very long.
Say that kind of a cause and effect that most people haven't looked at or realized, but with the Affordable Health Care Act and the company that I work with to keep good people, you know, knowledgeable people, those of us that know, that have experience and knowledge in the industry that we're working in, actually increased our benefits without increasing our pay. So, in other words, it's like one thing over here stimulated, we need to step up and do a little bit more and reinvest back in keeping these employees happy and still producing, you know, for us. So I could see a cause and effect that was positive, even for those of us still working with insurance.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, if you're in certain careers, you have the sort of the luxury of,
right now, my knowledge is
over their heads where you'll go someplace else if, you know, you don't have the benefits pretty much. Now, the people as far as, like, working at McDonald's and stuff like that, you know, it's been pretty bad. So this is really an advantage for them. And, you know, and people at Walmart, too, where Walmart was relying a lot on the local benefits from the state just to, you know, make an acceptable living. So,
which I can contend is that's nothing more than subsidizing a corporation's workforce.
Yeah, it's corporate welfare, but, I mean, it's not – there's many different variations of corporate welfare, and it's a million times larger than the people that they complain about, whether if they're buying steak or whatever in the grocery lines. I mean, that's just so stupid. It's like, you know, exclaiming about a penny when there's hundreds of dollars flying out your car window, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Exactly.
Sense.
But then again, like I said, the extreme reactionaries aren't real known for employing critical thinking and logical argumentation. It's all knee-jerk gut reactions.
Yeah. Yeah, it really caters to the baser instincts of your reptile brain. You know, I mean, it's like a real easy to understand hate issue, you know, these people, that type of thing, you know. And,
right.
You
the
know,
generalization.
It them out and,
right. The straw man arguments, you know.
Yeah. And you know, it's easy for them to understand, someone's buying steak at the checkout as opposed to someone's doing the Irish double sandwich tax evasion through Apple and they got, you know, $9 billion offshore that they're not paying taxes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's complicated. You know,
buying
a steak in the checkout line, they see them and, you know, like, they're buying steak. You know, ooh. Nobody's
well
a tax expert.
I've always said, hey, wait a minute, to friends that say, hey, listen, I see people using, welfare food stamps at the grocery store wearing lots of jewelry and getting into a brand new car. And I'm like, you know, this is so much propaganda from the extreme
right.
The other day, I myself was in Publix and in the food line counting my last dollar bills to get, you know, some stuff in there. And as I was the person ahead of me, went through the line, and she looked like she was, you know, all right, doing well, well-dressed, you know. A lady.
You know, the thing is I would prefer a million times over, I would prefer that they give thousands of dollars to every meth head mom, every heroin addict mom with a kid, than buy one more F-35 fighter.
I agree with you there.
You know, I would say, okay, your cheating is fine. You know, you got a kid, you know, we'll advise you, whatever. But, you know, just goddamn quit buying these $1 billion F-35s and throwing money away and everything. You
Let
know,
me
it's,
give you some numbers.
It's
along that
penny
line,
wise and pound foolish.
Yeah. Let me give you some numbers.
If we had
just withheld 25% of what we have spent as a nation in Iraq, we could have funded 100% all of Social Security for the next 75 years. Just 25% of what we spent only.
We could have rebuilt
Iraq.
The entire nation infrastructure.
Oh,
exactly.
New bridges. New waterways, new everything.
And it just burns your ass that these guys
it does.
And take money under the table and money on top of the table right in front of the public, and the public is sitting there.
They're very blatant about it. Yeah.
You know, just absolutely stunning that people are not saying enough already.
I know it. Why are people aren't in the streets? You know, here's my slogan if I was going to run for president. My slogan would be, screw the Middle East. We're going to have a public work program for 10 years. We're going to hire people that are unemployed. We're going to build new bridges. We're going to build new waterways. We're going to build new highways. We're going to have the best-looking parks in the whole world. And Saudi Arabia can go fuck themselves. I mean, excuse my language.
Germany did. That's exactly what Germany did. It's exactly what all European countries did, except, notably, Greece. A lot of corruption there. And in Spain now, they have a gag order on protesting. You're a terrorist if you're in the streets protesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there was a woman that was from Ukraine, and she was tweeting about some of the stuff that, you know, she is pro-Russian, and she was tweeting about some of the stuff of Ukraine, you know, some of the Nazi party and all this other stuff. And suddenly Canada doesn't want her to play in the orchestra. You know, did you read about that?
I missed that one.
Yeah.
No.
So, you know, I don't know if I agree with all what she's saying, but, you know, even if I didn't agree or did agree, you know, I don't think that you should be fired just because you're tweeting something.
Right.
And these are just a few of the things that you wonder. You know, I think that with the organizational quality that I've seen on the side by not just the Green Party, but all the groups that have formed since Occupy, I would think that this upcoming election season, especially at the Hillary Clinton rallies and appearances, would be the perfect time to organize protests, you know, to get the message out and to and make the candidate face those issues, too.
Mm-hmm.
That is the perfect time to do it. You know, they should already be planning it out. And I think I read something recently on Popular Resistance by Kevin Sneeze about it. Did I lose you guys?
I'm just even talking. Well, of course, I'm thinking about Rubio. What's the other? Cruz. Basically, even on Fox News, they're calling some of these extreme reactionary conservatives running for president right now, saying, this is what you're saying, you know, and there's a lot of people that disagree with you. Do you really think, you know, oh, no, I never said it. Yeah, look, here's the tape. Here's where you said it. Well, then he, like, what was his name? Or the one? Rand Paul. Thank you, right? Even put his finger to his lip and told the woman, shush her up. Like, look, you know, we're not going there, you know. I'm sorry, you're running for president. I'm going to pose some pertinent questions to you. I don't care if you don't like them, but, you know, I'm going to ask them.
No, but they get away with it. They get away with it in many more places than Fox. They get away with it even at MSNBC, you know, if they're a Democrat or if they're on a Republican show. I mean, have you seen what Morning Joe does with Republicans? I mean...
No, I don't. No.
it's amazing. I really think, and I don't think that the protesting should be beeline to the right-wing nut jobs that are out there running, including Jebelah Bush. Listen, I'm from Florida. I can tell you what kind of a hanyak this guy is and what kind of a cheat he is and double-tongued fellow he is.
It was under his administration that they stole the Florida elections.
Here's the other thing, too, about Jeb Bush. He says one thing, he does another. He makes no commitment to – only thing he makes a commitment to is money. That's basically what the guy does, and you can preview him that way.
That's true. Really, the whole Bush family, every Bush that's been in office.
The thing is the game as it sits right now, the rules are you can't not be a complete whore for the money. I mean, you have to have the $1 billion or $2 billion to run.
Right. Well, then you're talking about campaign. We're talking about personal. Oh, yeah, this goes into my pocket, my hip pocket here, money.
But the campaign continues. I mean, she still is going to need a war chest if she wants to get reelected. The Democratic Party has to have a war chest. It's all about the money.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, the lesser of two evils argument doesn't hold any muster for anybody who's critically thinking about leadership, in my opinion. But the thing is, that there are going to be more people who care about how they're voting that are looking at Hillary. Just in my opinion, they're going to be listening to her as the more sane side of the street. And a lot of women, just because she is a woman, I see it around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's just, it's incredible to me that people are just, oh, well, it's a woman. How could we go wrong? I mean, hello?
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying that protest groups and organizers for groups need to really put their eye on Hillary and her campaign and force her to address these issues through protest at her event. I really think there's an opportunity there. She's the one who's got a campaign that says, and opportunity, you know?
Well,
I mean,
I guess I have to take... And it's a cold, hard, realistic look at it.
Oh.
If it really comes down to Hillary and Jeb Bush, I will not go with Jeb Bush. I don't even know if there'll be a third party even on my ballot back home in Maryland, that or even Ohio here, you know, should I choose to vote here. So, you know,
wait,
it's another,
wait,
if I'm down to the two ones, I got to think of my life. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Gwen.
Well, that's that Loeb thing going on, the lesser of two evils, which keeps
agreed.
The party system in power. And when guys, when men, men and women like yourself or myself say distinctly to our community, I am not going to play that game anymore. This is my candidate. They're the Green Party or they're the Communist Party or they're the Engineers Party, whoever.
All right.
Oh, I wouldn't vote for that one. I know they're screwed up.
Listen, I'll tell you what. Instead of these buffoons like Roseanne Barr, who gets out there and puts herself in the camera lens and takes
it. Right. Well, she went off the deep end, didn't she?
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
She melted down.
Did you see what she wrote last week about Bibi?
Yeah.
About Netanyahu?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, my God. And she got pissed at me on Twitter. Oh, boy. She got really pissed at me. I consider
that
a hash mark. That's a hash mark on my sleeve, man. To have Roseanne Barr call me out is a hash mark. I mean, she's, you know, she's totally not a feminist. Totally for apartheid. Totally for war. You know, that's really opinion.
I think you should bring that up for advertising for Here Be Monsters. I mean, you're getting that kind of clout now.
No, I just...
You know, it's like, it doesn't matter what they say about you as long as they spell your name right. That's what we're going for.
Well, you know, the thing is, she had probably several hundred people do it. And apparently she's got her little, you know, she's got people who do that for that Twitter stuff.
Oh, no doubt.
They fired off at everybody. They fired off at almost
every little army.
Yeah. They said, oh, no, we ain't going to take this. It's going right back out at you. But that's what she's looking for. She's looking for attention. That's the nature of that beast. The thing is, there are candidates. There is one candidate I know of out there, the Green Party candidate, if she says she's running. Jill Stein has not yet committed to running for the presidency. She's just exploring it. But I voted for her the last time out, and if she's on the ticket, I'll vote for her this time. But I will not cast a vote for Jeb Bush, and I will not cast a vote for Hillary Clinton.
I can respect that fact. I'll just say, I can respect that fact.
I will not. The more that we get together and bring up the light on this and talk about the issues truly and talk about the difference between candidates, then, you know, I mean, Jill Stein's idea of infrastructure and revitalization of the economy is what most of us would think right off the top of our heads. And that
Absolutely.
Is that we need to get back to work at infrastructure. We don't need to be spending money on the military the way we have been. We need to also revive industry in this country through the green initiatives, green energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know,
right.
That alone, those two things alone are huge, and they don't come anywhere near these candidates in these two parties, you know?
Right. No, I agree.
So we've got somebody in the chat room, Gia's in there, and she's asking, because she missed most of the show, do we like her or not, Hillary? Well, I don't like her, not a bit. I think that probably you gentlemen should speak for yourselves. I don't like
All
her.
All right. Go ahead, Dave.
I'm going to write something in the chat room about it.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I guess it falls to me. and I'll say that she's not the perfect candidate, but if it comes down to the two, I at least think that she would have somewhat more consideration of the working middle class than Jeb Bush ever would. So I would have to cast my vote for her.
So you're on the lesser of two evils party, which I wouldn't disrespect you, but I just not my walk.
And like I said, I don't even know if the Green Party will even be on the ballot in Maryland or Ohio. See,
that's the part.
They actually, especially in Ohio, they strive to keep very proactive of keeping third party candidates off the ballot. They don't, you know, in the Republican controlled aspects here in Ohio. Well, that's generally the state of Ohio. Not saying, and there's more, at least there's some moderates still in Ohio Republicans, but they still march lockstep of trying to keep those annoying little third parties off the ballots.
Yes. And, you know, David, you're really quite right. She is charming and she is cordial, but she definitely, you know, we need to take the corporations out of the politics.
I was trying to think, was it New Zealand that actually put a limit on how much campaigns could gather to run that way? That's the way they kept the big and influential money. It was either Australia or New Zealand, one of the English-speaking countries.
It's not Australia.
Then it must have been New Zealand.
Australia is having.
I'd have to go back and research that. But I heard it. It was still on NPR and kind of stuck it in the back of my mind. And I don't know if I'm in somebody. And I was thinking it was New Zealand had actually said, you know what, we got to keep corporation money out of this. You're going to allow to have this much. Get your word out on this much. And let the people decide. And the thing is, what we really have a problem with in this country is not so much corporations funding the mainstream parties. It's when they start funding people for a free America, you know, these little, you know, offshoots and stuff, where they can say anything. There's no checks and balance, no accountability for what they're putting out as being facts. In other words, defamation of character doesn't apply. Swift voting. You're talking about, yeah, it's Kerry, swift voting. And the thing is, and they even did it to their own, because McCain had won some primaries got into South Carolina, and they, his adopted black daughter, they, you know, what was his name? He died of brain cancer and then apologized to everybody. He went to Willie Horton and personally apologized to him for the Dukakis Willie Horton ad, because basically that destroyed Dukakis right there.
Well, McCain.
He was the one who invented dirty politics out of South Carolina. Lee Atwater.
Oh God, yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, right. And he was the one then. Basically, not only swift voted Kerry, when they paid people to stand up and lie on film, in political ads, but then they also did it to McCain in the primary in South Carolina when they wanted, you know, the anointed W. Bush to be, their candidate, and they totally swift voted McCain too.
Yeah,
and it works. You know, unfortunately, it works because we're getting back to the simple minds again.
Well, during that election and those campaign and that campaigning for the Republican nomination, McCain has never been ideal as a politician in my point of view, but he was not the kind of politician that he has become since that happened to him. He got vicious.
Right.
He really did turn around, because I spoke to him sitting at a table with a couple of other people drinking beer when he was coming through for what do you call it, during the Republican, you know, nomination between him
right,
and
right,
this
primary.
Was Massachusetts during that primary. There was a festival, and he appeared there, and I talked with him, and I didn't dislike him. I did not dislike him until after that election. He got nasty. I didn't agree with him much, but he was a gentleman, and he was also, he had a sense of humor. He really did.
Like you said, McCain, in that Republican primary, and I was very active in the Republican politics locally in Maryland District Number 1, he was my man. I knew that he was going to be better than W. Bush because I knew, I knew W. Bush was basically garbage, right? He was nothing more than a front man for the oil industry. And McCain wasn't so subservient to the oil industry and the things like that. He was my man.
Yeah, he wasn't. He was basically, he sounded very much like what they called him, a maverick, at least in his speak. But, of course, he was supported by a lot of bankers. He was supported by a lot of petroleum. He had people he was going to be, you know. But he wasn't the same after they swift voted him.
Right. And had McCain gotten elected, if they hadn't swift voted him, if he had gotten elected, we would not have had the second war for oil in Iraq. Because, like I said, at this time, I was doing working with a gentleman, Page One Science. The man who owned it was Marshall Strahoyan, and I heard with my own ears the instructions of coming out of the Pentagon saying, you know, when the main battle for it, you know, they dropped the 101st Airborne in to secure the oil wells so Saddam Hussein wouldn't blow him up like he did when he was retreating back out of Kuwait. And when the main battle force would get up to him, they were to turn those oil wells over to Halliburton. That's what the Second Iraqi War was. Halliburton saw a chance, and Dick Cheney, the Halliburton sacks, Dick Cheney, saw what they thought was an opportunist chance to grab all the oil wells in Iraq. And that's what the second Iraq war was.
I have a question. Okay. Keep going.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I mean.
Still there?
I am still here. I don't know if David is, but I'm wondering whether or not. Yeah, David, if there's a third party candidate available to you, is that the way you would vote? Or do
Absolutely.
You think,
yeah.
Okay.
That's the way I'm going.
Okay, so we got two on the third party and one on the lesser, and
well stated. I'll go with that. You know, like I said, we're all good here.
What I'd really like to see, and I think that we might, you know, have to organize protests to get this one done, and it probably won't work, but it's certainly worth the push. Is getting a third-party candidate involved in the debate.
You know, we saw that with Ross Perot, only because he had his own personal finances to do it. Can the Green Party generate enough donated revenue to get that seat on that table? I guess that's the question I'm posing.
David, what do you think?
I'm sorry, you broke up there. What's that again? Say that question again.
Okay, I'll repeat it again.
What do you think about getting, do you think it's possible to get a Green Party or a third party candidate involved in the national debate?
No, I don't think they would even allow it.
Exactly. You've got to have, like I said, Ross Perot was the last one that
they failed.
And he was using his own personal wealth to get that seat at that table. Could there be enough
The thing is the way that you have to look at it is I'm placing my vote not to try to get to the winning team. I'm placing my vote on a matter of principle and morals and who I decide who is the better person for this country. I'm done with the lesser of two evils. I'm done with holding my nose and voting for someone that's going to go and automatically invade some other country. I'm done with that. I'm for once going to vote what my conscience tells me to do.
Well, yeah. And I understand that, and and trust me, I totally respect that. But I guess my question was can the third party get enough money, revenue generated to even get a seat to get their word out in these national debates? In other words, when they have the presidential debates televised on TV and the vice presidential debates.
No,
that's what I'm saying.
No, and there's absolutely zero chance of them winning,
too.
And
unfortunately,
you know,
the word's not
as, a pragmatic viewpoint, even if they got elected, they wouldn't be able to do anything because the two parties run the House and the Congress. I mean, the House and the Senate. But the thing is I don't look at it as voting for someone that's going to automatically get things done. I look at it as placing my vote to show the other parties what it requires from them to get my vote.
Right.
You know, I'm looking at the election not as a zero-sum game. I'm looking at the election as, okay, they'll look after the election and look at what happened to their votes and why they received less, and they'll modify their behavior accordingly. And if more and more people go to a different party, they're going to say, hey, more people are going to this third party. Perhaps we should look at some of those ideas.
Well, and to kind of play along with to support what your statement there was, what do you think is the fastest growing we'll call it party or registration in this country?
Green Party.
People
Green
switching
party,
from Republican, no, independent. That is the fastest growing party because people are leaving the Republican Party, i.e. the moderate Republicans, or the Democrats that are disenfranchised, and they're saying, you know what, I want to cut my affiliation with these two parties. I'm not going to claim anybody. Actually, they're claiming themselves as independent, which is a party themselves, right? Which they don't realize that, but that's what it is. So there is a political party called the Independent Party, and it is the fastest-growing political party in this country today.
Gentlemen.
Well, that because of the Tea Party and all that stuff, they're sort of leaving the Republican Party?
No, the Tea Parties have already taken over the Republican Party. I'm talking this would be more of the moderate Republicans and saying,
these
people are batshit crazy. You know, I knew this guy. I knew his grandfather. They're Klansmen. Tea Party members in the First District of Maryland were the old Klansmen that still want to try to hunt down, what was his name?
Gentlemen.
Underground Railroad.
Gentlemen, we're at the top of the hour.
Go ahead.
I want to thank you for joining me today.
Tubman, Harriet Tubman?
Yeah, Harriet Tubman, yeah. They still want to go out and get Harriet Tubman and get her back in the chains. That's my area. Wow. Boy, was that a long way to nowhere.
Don't hold a grudge, huh?
They definitely hold a grudge. Yeah. She was real uppity, you know.
Yeah, she was. The War of Northern Aggression, you know.
That's right. That's what the Eastern Shore of Maryland was. Matter of fact, Lincoln had to send troops down to the town of Easton, and they arrested a judge right off the bench because of his seditions.
Gentlemen, we've got only about a minute left. I want to thank you both for being with me today. David, thanks for calling in and giving us your opinion. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
And
very nice, David. It's always nice speaking with you.
The social consciousness. I really appreciate it. And Wayne, thank you so much. On Sunday, and we will see you next Sunday. We will be here for you to hear next Sunday with Jack Odell. And this has been the Sunday Show with Jack Odell, F. Wayne Johnson, and myself, Gwen Berry.
Always a pleasure, Gwen. Good night.
With David Williams from Round 37. That's number 7.
Good night.
Thank you, guys. And
bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay.